For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome.
Good evening.
Very happy tonight to introduce our speaker, Eric Schutt, who's on our practice council and helps lead Meditation Wednesday mornings at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in downtown, and also leads our affiliated sitting in Hyde Park every Wednesday late afternoon at 5:30 in the vast reaches of Rockefeller Chapel down in Hyde Park. So thank you very much, Eric.
Thanks, everybody, for coming to sit. I hope you won't regret the rest of the evening. I have to ask Tygon's apology, or apologize to you, too, because I told you I was going to talk about something, and I'm not. I'm going to talk about something else.
Happens all the time.
Yeah. I got too carried away with what I was doing, and I just had to let it go this morning and start something else. We just chanted the song of the grass hut. There's a line in there. The reason I thought of that as something to chant tonight, because there's a line in there, don't separate from this skin bag here and now. And I'd just like you to keep that in mind, because as I proceed to get tangled up in what I'm trying to say, you can just like skip that part and go back to that line, and you'll be pretty close to where I'm trying to get. But the actual sort of title or theme of what I want to talk about is Zazen as forgiveness. And I hope the sort of strands why those things are related to each other will be somewhat evident by the time I'm done. When Reb Anderson, Tygon's teacher, was here a few months back, he, at a couple of points, I think once here and then once over at the Cenacle, sort of used this image of a circle of causes and conditions, and sort of emphasize that, you know, we are part of that circle always. I'm probably not expressing it the way that he did, but that's kind of what he was getting at. But he said there's this tendency to, when we think about this, to have this big circle and then somehow want to have this little bump, which is ourselves, as somehow standing outside that circle of causes and conditions, and treating that objectively and separating from it, trying to separate from it, having the delusion that we can separate from it. And as I was thinking about that with the group down at Rockefeller, shortly thereafter, we were talking about some things, and I had the occasion to read to them or talk to them about this gatha that we sometimes chant here. All my ancient twisted karma from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion, born through body, speech, and mind, I now fully avow. Now, the way I sort of connect this with what Reb was saying is that what we went on to talk about in the course of that discussion is that there's a sense in which we can never stand outside and separate from our own karma. And so in avowing our karma, embracing our karma in a sense, let me do that the other way. In not avowing our karma, we both misunderstand the nature of our how we come about what we're doing here, and we posit, you know, this some kind of other being that can stand outside of that, can be that little bump on Reb's circle, You know, and that's a very, in the context of Buddhist teaching, a kind of mistaken idea. And it has sort of pernicious effects for practice because it sort of sets up this idea that there's some, you know, better or deeper or more real self that somehow is not really involved with that. I mean, that's, oh yeah, I got this stuff, you know, but that's not really me. Well, I think there's a way in which it is really us. And I don't want to say that, I don't think we can say that we're strictly identical to our greed, hate, and delusion and our karma, but I also think we can't say that we're actually not that either. It's one of these cases that comes up all the time in the context of Dharma of, you know, it's not one, it's not two. It's something kind of in between or, well, in what we just chanted, said not to get stuck not only outside, inside, but also not in between. But it's, you know, it's not one, it's not two. But there's some way in which we can't separate from it. We have to engage it. And so in the context of this discussion, one of the people said, well, this is a kind of, you know, the skatha that you just read is a kind of confession. And I said, yeah, I think so. And he said, well, when, you know, the way I grew up, when we confess, there's another part of that, which is also, which is forgiveness. And he said, you know, what I've been exposed to and what we've talked about here, I don't hear much about forgiveness. So could you say something about that in the context of Zen and sitting practice? And it kind of stumped me. I didn't know how to respond initially, because it's true, it's not a word we use a lot, and so I couldn't readily access things to give him. But going away from there, the more I thought about it, I think there's a very real sense in which practice is entirely about forgiveness of a certain kind of way. And I'd like to try to explain that and talk about it a little bit. But starting out, you know, it wasn't even clear to me that I had sort of a sense of what forgiveness was, but it's not a term that I operate with a lot. It's something that's more at home in other religious discourses that I don't really participate in, and so I decided to look it up in the dictionary. And this is what I found. They more or less agree. I looked at American Heritage, and I look at Webster's. And so in American Heritage, it defines forgiveness first as to excuse a fault or offense, and secondly, to renounce anger or resentment against. Webster's defines it as to give up resentment or a claim to requital for something, and secondly, to cease to feel resentment against. So I thought, resentment, interesting. So I looked that up. And the definition kind of revolved around this, putting them together. Resentment, a feeling of indignant displeasure or persistent ill will at something regarded as wrong, insult, or injury. So I want to talk about practice, zazen, zazen in the literal sense of seated, you know, being sitting on a chair, but also in the bigger sense of our full engagement with, you know, whether walking, sitting, or standing, or lying down, when we're engaged in this practice as a way of stepping outside of indignant displeasure or persistent ill will at something regarded as wrong, insult, or injury. And I think the wrong or the insult or the injury that we carry around is it gets back to this gata again. It's this sense that we're not really this skin bag here and now. There's something better, something nobler, something grander somewhere else. And if we could just find that, we could get the chip off our shoulder. But we can't find that. That being doesn't exist. So looking at, you know, taking this idea of forgiveness, so, you know, there are different ways to look at it. The first way is theological. And that's, as I said, that's not a discourse that really comes up in this context. You know, it's not only, you know, people may disagree with me about this, but it's not only us who, you know, isn't that little bump outside that circle of causes and conditions. But there's, I don't think Buddhism really posits any kind of being outside that circle of causes and conditions. There is no bump, or, you know, even more radically, there is no, like, other little circles somewhere. So this kind of forgiveness doesn't come up. There's neither a being whose forgiveness we require, or some kind of a being that, interestingly, when you think about it in this context, would have to give up their resentment against us so that we could be forgiven. It just doesn't come up. You know, going back to the definition, there's no offense that we commit simply by being human beings. We cause harm and offense to ourselves and others by actions that become pervasive and habitual and are rooted in, you know, our actions and our attitudes. They're karmic. So I think in this discussion we can dispense with notions of theological forgiveness, for lack of a better term. You know, and there's this other very real sort of sense of forgiveness that we deal with all the time. And it's, I don't know what you call it. You could call it, you know, human forgiveness or social forgiveness. It's, you know, what takes place between us. You know, that's the work of apologizing, making restitution, healing, when one or the other of us has wronged somebody, and that breach needs to be bridged and healed. And there are many places, you know, that kind of pop out in Buddhist stuff that most of us are familiar with that do really touch on this. I mean, for example, there are the lines in the Dhammapada: "He abused me, he struck me, he overcame me. In those who harbor such thoughts, hatred will never cease. He abused me, he struck me, he overcame me, he robbed me. In those who do not harbor such thoughts, hatred will cease." So I think that touches on a kind of, you know, of a letting go of a sense of injury and wrong. Also in the ninth vow, the ninth precept that we take, "A disciple of Buddha does not harbor ill will, but rather cultivates and encourages loving kindness and understanding." Well, that too could easily be understood as a kind of forgiveness, a kind of letting go of a sense of injury and wrong and resentment. But the question is, you know, how do we access that? How do we access that? How do we become able to do that? And I think that it's in, I'd like to suggest anyway, that it's in Zazen itself that we sort of really take that on. So there's a bit of a jump here, but I'd like to just sort of dive into it. So how would Zazen do this? A few months back, maybe a year ago, Hogetsu brought in what I've come to understand is a very kind of hopeful teaching from a collection called the Anguttara Nikaya. I think the translation is the numerical discourses, things that the Buddha said that are, you know, these lists, you know, these numbered things that are arranged according to that. And it was, I think it was called something like, well, I don't even recall what the title was, but I'll just read a section from it. "There are five facts, O monks, which ought to be contemplated by everyone, whether a man or a woman, a householder, or one who has gone forth by as a monk. What five? I am sure to become old. I can't avoid aging. I am sure to become ill. I cannot avoid illness. I am sure to die. I cannot avoid death. I must be separated and parted from all that is dear and beloved to me. And then the last one. I am the owner of my actions, heir of my actions. Actions are the womb from which I have sprung. Actions are my relations. Actions are my protection. Whatever actions I do, good or bad, of these I shall become the heir. So Buddha's talking there about karma. Now, you know, that could initially sound somewhat bleak, at least the first four, but it's really not. And why is that so? Because what the Buddha is doing there is reminding us to fully recognize and acknowledge what our karmic situation as human beings are or is, you know, and asking us not to attempt to evade these things, you know. And so, I don't know, most of you are probably sort of familiar with this sort of cosmology of the six realms of being, of which being human is one. There are these other modes of being. They're the gods who get, you know, intoxicated with bliss. There are the angry gods, or the titans, whatever you call them, who become sort of caught up in envy and ambition. They're the hell beings who get totally enmeshed in anger and ill will. Animals who are kind of represented as being so enmeshed in feeding themselves in a way that, you know, they can't look up, can't get the big picture. You know, this is not the noble wild beasts of the jungle. It's more like sheep and goats and cattle, I think, they're being thought of here. And then there are the hungry ghosts, the ones who are so caught up in a kind of insatiable desire that they can't really see what their situation is. They can't step out of their karmas. In this cosmology, it's the human realm, the realm where we can see these things that I just mentioned, that we're going to grow old and die, you know, we're going to become ill, all these things. That's represented as being the one from which we can actually step out of the wheel of samsara. We can actually, this provides a context in which we can actually wake up. So going back to these contemplations, you know, well, contemplations, you know, all these things, we're going to grow old, we're going to die, these kinds of things, these are all sort of truths we recognize sort of intellectually. But how do we actually take that out of our sort of discursive realm and actually put it into our flesh and bones? And I think the way we do that actually is through zazen and totally engaging with this skin bag here and now. There's another way in which, you know, again, there's a kind of a jump here, and I hope you'll forgive me, but, you know, in Zen and in Buddhism, they talk about the three poisons of greed, hate, and delusion. And there's a really interesting way, I never thought about this before, I'm not sure I've heard it spoken of before, but as I was thinking about this, you know, it occurred to me that the dukkha, suffering, is the thing that it kind of creates the conditions under which greed, hate, and delusion can arise. Simultaneously, greed, hate, and delusion, you know, create the conditions and are manifestations of dukkha. They're co-determining, they arise together. And in Zazen, by being willing to just sit in that, just be in that, not separate from that, let those things rise and fall of their own accord, without engaging in sort of habitual, conditioned defenses and reactions against them. There's a way in which that whole kind of situation can start to loosen up a bit. I'm not saying that it's going to go away necessarily, but it can loosen, it can lighten. And the ground of this sort of co-arising of these two things, of the three poisons on the one hand, greed, hate, delusion, and suffering on the other hand, you know, this gets back, you know, sort of circling back to this idea of forgiveness and what that's about. It isn't any kind of evil or depravity. You know, I'm not saying that there is no such thing as human evil, or that we don't need to address that and engage it, but we have to understand the ground of it, which is a kind of it's rooted in ignorance. It's rooted in not seeing what our real situation is. So again, you know, what I'm trying to say is that when we sit in Zazen, these things can kind of loosen up a little bit. We can start to understand who and what we are in a context that includes that, but is not limited to that. So why is this? How does that work? I think of... let me see if I can remember this. I'm just thinking of this now, that there's something in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, where Suzuki Roshi talks about not being restricted by one's limitations. It's a really interesting passage, and I wish I could remember exactly how it went. But do you remember it?
Not verbatim, but
yeah. Yeah, and I think it's related to that. How does it work that by sitting in Zazen and sort of witnessing but engaging in a different way our own greed, hate, delusion, and being willing to just be that, you know, be in that context and to see ourselves as these finite beings, situated beings who don't have a better place to go. The place where we have to engage our lives is right in the middle of all of that stuff. How does that work? What does that have to do with forgiveness? Well, there's one sense in which this is the part where I really had trouble, like, putting it together. Um, So there's one way in which by doing this, we sort of undo in advance the conditions that would require us to either need forgiveness ourselves or need to demand it of somebody else. You know, by engaging meditation, we're giving up resentment. We're kind of giving up a war against the three poisons and delusions. We're not accepting them. We're not endorsing them or embracing them. But we're sort of stepping outside of that and realizing that there's actually no indignity at all in simply being a human being. And you know, there's nothing to resent in the situation of the fact that we're going to get sick, we're going to grow old, and we're going to die. So that's one sense of it. Have to excuse me, I've gotten a little lost here. There's another way in which in doing this we become a little softer and a little more willing to disappoint ourselves and others and to be willing to be disappointed by them in the sense of seeing ourselves together in this situation without demanding that it be somebody else and that other people be somebody else, be somebody better, be somebody different, and including ourselves in that. Now, I'm not saying that we don't continue to, you know, do our best to live according to the precepts and so on, but we don't have to wait to be somebody else, somebody good, somebody better, to sort of fully engage that. So this is, you know, so this is the kind of forgiveness that I think sort of underlies everything. It's simply a willingness to be who we are. And to give up our anger, resentment, all those kinds of things about that situation and engage it in a different way. And, you know, going back to that sort of definition, that dictionary definition I gave you before, giving up resentment is what forgiveness is. So it's in that sense that that I think Zazen is can be understood as a kind of forgiveness and can be understood as the correct response to going back to that student's question, Zazen can be seen as the correct response to, you know, well, what do we do after we've avowed our karma? Well, we continue to avow it and we do Zazen. So, and sort of looping back yet another loop, that's not separating from this skin bag here and now. It's willing to stay completely enmeshed in that. And so, you know, I'm sure that's a little unclear in some ways, but I'd like to make one sort of final kind of observation from all this. So I was thinking about, so we're willing to be enmeshed. Well, that's an interesting thing because that's what bodhisattvas do. Bodhisattvas make the decision for the benefit of all beings to stay enmeshed in causes and condition, not to try and step out or evade their own karma or anybody else's. And that's really interesting because that means that as soon as we engage in the practice of simply sitting down on our mats and cushions, and being willing to be who we are, we've kind of, at least in a certain way, you know, already, you know, put a foot onto the Bodhisattva's path. And when we do that, it opens up all kinds of things. You know, we can learn how to greet sort of the numberless beings that we will encounter in life, you know, the numberless beings that will arise and fall on our mats and cushions as we sit in Zazen with a certain kind of understanding and compassion. We can greet each of the inexhaustible delusions that we find ourselves in, catch ourselves in, as opportunities to wake up, you know. We can embrace everything that rises and falls in our lives as at least a potential Dharma gate, a way in which we can fully we can just treat it all as an opportunity to wake up without freaking out about it. You know, and so there's a way, you know, just following from that, that simply by sitting down and simply by being willing to be karmically twisted, enmeshed, confused, deluded human beings, without turning away from that, that gives the opportunity for Buddhas to arise. So so that's it. That's all I've got to say. And I wish I could say it better, but I think you catch my drift, I hope so. So anyway, thanks a lot.
Very good. Well done.
Thank you.
Comments, questions, responses? Anyone, please.
Thanks for I think that what I understood what you were saying and sort of what I've experienced with Zazen myself is by practicing being awake and by practicing being present, I think I am less likely to have lofty expectations of people and situations, and so less likely to be disappointed in the first place because I'm a little bit more in tune with reality, and so when something happens, whether it's positive or negative, if I don't like it, it's kind of what it is, opposed to a dashed hope and I like something that I've projected onto. So it makes it a lot easier to be forgiving when things don't go one way, they just go the way they go. So I think that there is a lot to be said for Zazen in the practice of forgiveness as far as really seeing reality as it is and not imagining a better reality or a better, you know, family or whatever is going on, whatever it is, a boss or whoever, you know, tightens the screws. So, I think Zazen's been really helpful overall, you know, for me.
Yeah, if I may just respond to that, I think that's a really good point. I mean, there's a way in which, you know, and I think I meant to say something like this and probably didn't, but when we accept ourselves as we are in Zazen, then we're much more willing to sort of cut other people some slack too. And I'm not saying, you know, we would cut ourselves slack in Zazen, but, you know, we realize that people are caught up in all kinds of things. And it's not because they're bad, necessarily. I mean, there are bad things in the world, but it's... we're confused. We're not evil. You know? And so we can respond with, you know, from that we can find ways to respond in some other way than, you know, pushing those situations away, pushing those people away, and making everything worse by doing so. Thank you.
I just want to say thank you also for touching on this, because previous to coming here, that was pretty much my goal, was to find a way to check out of suffering, or to check out of karma, because, you know, I felt really bad about things that I had done. So, you know, there was a little bit of need for forgiveness, too, that I am going to hurt people just by existing, you know, in this karmic circle as is. So I just want to say thank you.
Thank you for the talk. I also think that just the basic image of the circle and the pimple or whatever, the papers in that image, that just made sense to me in terms of interfacing with the idea of forgiveness, because, you know, the only way you can be in a place of delusion is feel that you're not a part of the, you know, the whole, the flow of everything, is if there's, you know, resistance or, you know, sort of like something to be forgiven. So, I don't know if that makes any sense, but I, anyway, because that's the only way you could imagine that you weren't a part of it, is if there was some need to separate. And so, anyway, also just it's so, just to hear your viewpoints, just to hear, you know, it really struck me. I mean, it brought me kind of to a raw place, some of the ways that you described it. So I appreciate your really, maybe it's down to earthness. I don't know, there's something about it. I was just like, wow.
Thank you. I mean, one of the, you know, following up on what you're, Sarah, is saying, it, you know, and putting into this context of being forgiving and taking it beyond that and learning how to actually, you know, engage things with loving kindness and compassion is like if you actually can start to understand yourself as not out, you know, not a blip, but part of you know, this web of causes and conditions. I mean, it almost becomes an obvious next sort of thing to understand. Well, if there is no outside of that, you know, then we're all in this together. You know, it's not only that we cannot separate ourselves from the causes and conditions, but I can't separate my causes and conditions from yours. I'm involved with them already right from the start, and you're sort of involved with mine. And that's not to say, you know, that we don't have our separateness as beings and our responsibilities to work with our limitations and to try to make whole and make right the mistakes that we've made and all those kinds of things. But, you know, so we have that separateness, but it's that not one, not two thing again. You know, it's like we have that separateness, but that separateness takes place in the context of us being in this thing together, you know?
Another analogy I don't remember where I heard it, but kind of another way to think of the blip. I was thinking of we're all kind of boats going down a river, and sometimes one boat runs into another boat, and if there's someone in the boat, there's someone to say, "Ah, you ran into my boat." But if there's no one in there, it's just like the boat hits the boat, and then they keep going down the river. And so I always kind of think of,
you were talking about Zazen as forgiveness. I always think of Zazen as kind of emptying my boat. I don't think I ever got to the point where I wasn't excited about it necessarily, but it's kind of...
Well, I haven't gotten to the point where I've been entirely forgiving either.
Yeah.
You know? That boat, it's got a hole and stuff, keeps coming up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. You got me thinking of quite possibly confused terms about kind of a lesser stepping away and a greater stepping away. That clearly very much in terms of Reb's image of the supposed bump just outside the circle. You can't really step away from the circle of your actions, other people's actions, and that includes actions of the mind, emotions, drives, and so on. But in order to see that circle, whether you're talking in terms of access to Buddha mind or whatever, you're necessarily looking at it in some sense from outside of it. Not in terms of mental action, but perhaps in terms of contemplation, of insight. You're looking at something that you're inside of. But if you're looking at it, you are, in that sense, to some extent, however momentarily, outside of it, beyond it. Maybe only for a few seconds at a time, but enough so that you catch a notion of the whole picture, and the whole picture is not a circle. Anyway, that's what
well, that's a, you know, that's a really, you're touching on a real important and sort of difficult image. You know, we can't see our own eyes. We can't sort of step back, and so when we objectify in the way that you're talking about, we're of necessity separating and therefore sort of falsifying. But you know, to go back to this image of the boat, you know, we don't need to look at the boat. We sit in the boat. We can sit in the boat, and you know, we can talk about the boat ride later. But the main thing is to be in it.
It occurs to me with Jim's image that part of what we need to forgive ourselves for, and part of the limitation that we need to forgive ourselves for, is that we do separate from the skin bag here, and we do look at ourselves,
yeah,
you know, as you're saying. So we must forgive ourselves for being human beings, including that we do imagine we're separate from this circle. And to see that and as part of our limitation, and then, oh yeah, Zazen brings us back to, oh, here we are, right in the boat. So yeah, thank you. And thank you very much, Eric. Very good discussion, everyone. It's really delightful for everyone to be here.